From Voices of Oklahoma for KVOY Community Radio 104.5 FM in Wynnewood. Also available online on voicesofok.org and audioport.org. I am Olivier Ray and this is the Post Cafe, 30 minutes of intense curiosity.
We are today in Oklahoma City with Chris Steele. He is a United States politician from the US state of Oklahoma who serves as state representative. Steele serves in the Oklahoma House of Representatives as the Speaker of the House, a position he took over after the 2010 elections. He presided over the 53rd Oklahoma legislature. Steele served as a speaker pro tempore under Chris Bing. He was chosen as a speaker designated in 2009, elected to the Oklahoma House of Representatives on November 7, 2000. He was term limited out of office in 2012. He is also the executive director of the Education and Employment Ministry, also known as TEAM. It's an interfaith non-profit organization dedicated to breaking the cycle of incarceration and poverty through education, personal development and work readiness training. So, thank you, Chris, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Could you explain what is the TEAM organization, also called the Education and Employment Ministry?
So, TEAM, the Education and Employment Ministry, is a community-based nonprofit dedicated to helping individuals impacted by the criminal justice system reach their full potential in life through education, personal development, and job placement assistance.
All right, and since when does this exist?
TEAM has been in existence for 30 years.
Okay, and are you since the beginning with this organization?
No, I have not been with TEAM since the beginning. Rather, I have been the executive director of TEAM for the past 4.5 years.
Okay. Can you explain more in details, maybe concerning the helps of the people who are getting out of the prison?
Yes, so TEAM has two components. We have a reentry program for individuals who are currently incarcerated and in the process of transitioning from incarceration into our community. It's an 18-month program. The first 9 months occur pre-release or prior to the person being released from the Department of Corrections. The last 9 months takes place post-release, so after they transition back into the community, our organization stays with them to ensure they have everything necessary to be successful in their job, with their families, and in the community. TEAM also has a diversion program, which is designed to help keep individuals out of the prison system or out of jails. We are the managing partner for Oklahoma County Community Sentencing, which exists to connect individuals who may struggle with addiction or mental illness with appropriate treatment services and mental health services. And then we also provide employment assistance and case management services, and we ensure that those individuals are compliant with their court order so that they can remain in the community and take care of their families and reach their full potential in life.
All right. How do you select the inmate? Do you have a special criteria for that?
There are criteria in place that would enable a person to, or qualify a person to be eligible for our program. The Department of Corrections ultimately determines who would be the best fit for our program in the reentry side. So primarily it would be contingent upon a person's crime, their what we call controlling offense. It would also be contingent upon if they are planning to remain in the Oklahoma City area, and ultimately how much time they have remaining on their sentence. Those are some of the broad criteria. On the diversion side, it's completely up to the courts to determine who would be placed in community sentencing, which would then qualify them to be a part of our diversion program here at TEAM.
All right. If you do that, it's because the states don't provide anything for the inmates, no helps, there is nothing, no structure, no official organization, or is it something you do beside this organization?
You are correct. So the state of Oklahoma does very little in the way of effective reentry programming because the Department of Corrections is so underfunded and overpopulated. There are very little resources for them to be able to ultimately invest in education, job training, treatment services, and an effective case management plan for individuals individuals who have paid their debt and served their time. And so TEAM, as a nonprofit, sort of is able to fill that void, fill that need, at least for individuals that are transitioning back into Oklahoma County.
So does the state fund you a little bit? Do you receive any money from official departments or the county?
So TEAM's funding is primarily obtained through private donations, through foundations, through corporations, and the like. We are part of a community collaboration in Oklahoma County known as Work Ready Oklahoma. And part of that initiative is funded through a U.S. Department of Labor grant. And then we also have a contract with the Department of Corrections for the diversion program within community sentencing.
All right. You talk about the prison overpopulation. Last year, you supported two bills, the State Question 780 and 781, to reduce from felony to misdemeanor numerous drug and felonies offenses, to therefore reduce the population in prison. So these two bills passed last year. Are they already in place or not?
So the reforms that you were speaking of, State Question 780 and 781, which seeks to reclassify low-level offenses such as simple drug possession and low-level property crimes under $1,000 from felony convictions punishable by incarceration to misdemeanors punishable by treatment and mental health care and supervision within the community, did pass. The people ultimately endorsed both of these state questions by nearly 60%, but they are scheduled to go into effect July 1st of 2017, so they are not yet implemented in the state of Oklahoma. And that's significant to note because we wanted to give and provide a period of time to be able to prepare and plan and ensure that these reforms are properly implemented. Unfortunately, the state legislature has taken it upon themselves to try to repeal the reforms and ultimately undermine and undo the will of the people as it pertains to these correction reforms in Oklahoma.
So is it legal to repeal these bills because people vote for that? They say yes, and so after they can just remove it, say, oh no, we are not interested anymore.
Well, unfortunately, the legislature has the prerogative to undo the will of the people as it pertains to state questions. I do not think it's wise. I think it's irresponsible. And quite honestly, I think it's insulting that our legislature would try to ultimately undermine the will of the people. So we are doing everything that we know to do to try to encourage our elected officials to reconsider their position on wanting to repeal these reforms and allow the will of the people to stand.
All right. And so what is the situation of the prison in Oklahoma?
So currently, Oklahoma prisons are over capacity. They're overpopulated. Our current prison population stands at about 110% capacity. So we are over capacity, literally busting at the seams. The Department of Corrections has moved in cots, temporary beds, into waiting rooms, into gymnasiums, into break rooms, into areas that any area that they have available to try to house the number of people that are currently in our prison system, in our penal system. And statistically, Oklahoma's prison population is 78% higher than the national average. And again, Oklahoma leads the nation in female incarceration. We incarcerate female offenders at 2.5 times the national average per capita. And we're also number one in incarceration of African Americans. So communities of color are disproportionately impacted, as well as females, by our current incarceration laws.
So why this situation, why the legislator, you have been a legislator before, why they didn't try to reform this system before?
Well, I did have the honor of serving in the Oklahoma legislature for 12 years, from 2000 to 2012, and we did try to reform the prison system in 2010, 11, and 12, and ultimately we were able to get some laws changed and some bills passed. They were known as the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. Unfortunately, after I term limited, after starting in 2013, the legislature refused to provide funding for the reforms that had been enacted, and so the reforms ultimately did not take effect because they were not funded.
Okay. You are a Republican.
I am a Republican.
And so they already had the majority before. So how is it possible that you are from the majority, you propose a bill, and the end, they don't accept it? It's because Republican legislators are not ready to this change, or because some people have some interest to have more people in prison, or why? Why such a problem just to try to reform and simplify the system?
Well, I think there are several factors that have historically caused our legislature to resist meaningful corrections reform. Part of it, I think, has to do with the idea that it's politically popular to be perceived as quote unquote tough on crime, and the way that an elected official would measure his or her worth in being tough on crime would be to incarcerate more people for longer periods of time. I do think that there's beginning to be a paradigm shift in our thought processes, and I think more elected officials are beginning to understand that they can be just as tough for individuals who pose a legitimate danger to society or risk to public safety, but twice as smart when it comes to how to address low-level offenses, especially if addiction or mental illness is a driving factor behind the antisocial behavior. And so I actually am encouraged a little bit by the fact that the legislature is currently taking up some very forward-thinking corrections reform measures this year. It's sort of a contradictory because on one hand, we have some very forward-thinking reform measures that are making their way through the political process. And on the other hand, we have some very bold attempts to try to undo the reforms that the voters recently voted in favor of. And so there's a little bit of a contradiction that's taken place, but I think one factor that has caused led to Oklahoma's highest incarceration rates would be this wanting to be perceived as tough on crime. I think another factor probably does have to do with some financial interest from the private prison industry. We have a lot of private prisons within our state who make a profit off of individuals who are incarcerated. That's their business. And there may be a need for private prisons when we're over capacity. I think it's probably more cost effective to contract with a private prison than it is to build a new facility. However, it doesn't seem that we're making any steps to try to reduce our reliance on our private prison providers. And that concerns me because I think it's wrong for an entity to make money off the backs of people who commit crime.
So you say there is a powerful lobbying from the private sector, from the private prison, to stop every reform and to push the legislature to build more prisons and go in this direction a little.
Yes, sir. So there is an effort among certain private providers to try to stall the reforms that are taking place. But I believe if it's wrong to make money off the backs of people who commit crimes, or wrong to make money off people's weaknesses from the private industry, it's equally wrong for state government to make money off people who commit crime. And fortunately, we're seeing a similar dynamic within our counties. County jails and county sheriff's departments and what have you are protesting the fact that the Department of Correction is trying to cancel certain contracts with the jails because they see that as a source of revenue for their county. And I think that that's equally concerning. I would say that the bigger problem is the fact that we're not adequately funding county governments. We're not adequately funding our criminal justice system. And because we're not adequately funding our criminal justice system, we have sort of supplanted that funding by assessing fees and fines to people who have committed crime, which is very problematic because many individuals impacted by the criminal justice system aren't able to get a job and they can least afford to pay back the fees and fines. But that's become a significant source of revenue for our criminal justice system. And I think that's wrong. I think that that way of funding our criminal justice system is upside down.
So you mean that someone who go to prison, they don't only go to prison, they have to pay fine, plus they will have felony, for example, so they can't find a job. So they have to pay the prison, plus they can't find a job. So what do we do? They're just stuck?
They're stuck, and oftentimes they repeat criminal behavior because that's all they feel like they can do. And so just to underscore the dynamic that you described, so once a person has paid their debt and served their time in Oklahoma from being in prison, they transition back into the community, but they are a convicted felon. And that felony conviction remains with them for life, for the remainder of their life. And that felony conviction acts as a scarlet letter that excludes an individual from most employment opportunities, so they can't find a job. And it also, a felony conviction in Oklahoma also excludes a person from most housing opportunities. And so you're automatically disqualified from public assistance for housing, and most people won't even rent to a person who's a convicted felon. So you can't find a job, you really can't find a place to live, but you have to pay back your fees and fines, or it becomes a violation of your probation and it could land you back in prison. On top of that, most people in prison in Oklahoma are also parents of children, and so they have the responsibility to provide for their children. Again, they can't work, there's really no place for them to live, they have to pay back their fees and fines. Now they have to take care of their kiddos, and on top of everything else, whatever their core issue is that may be driving the antisocial behavior, be that addiction or mental illness, they're still battling that core issue because they did not receive any treatment or any help or any intervention for that issue while they were incarcerated. And then on top of everything else, being in prison in a very hostile environment where we are literally warehousing individuals, it causes a person to pick up antisocial behavior. And so they often carry that dynamic with them back into the community as well. And it, quite frankly, it's a recipe for disaster. And we're setting people up for failure rather than setting people up for success. And I believe that we can do better as a state.
Do you know how many inmates we have in Oklahoma today?
Today we have approximately 26,698 individuals who are currently in prison in Oklahoma. We have another 1,500 individuals who are awaiting placement in the Department of Corrections facilities, but they're in jails. And then in addition to that, we have about 31,000 individuals who are on some sort of Department of Corrections supervision. So all in all, we have over 61,000 Oklahomans who are currently in the care or in the custody of the Department of Corrections.
I think in France we have a population of 65 million people, and we should have about 70,000 inmates for right. 65 million people.
Yes, sir. We are in Oklahoma, we are incarcerating way too many people. We incarcerate people for things that other states, other nations simply do not incarcerate for.
Do we know how many people have a felony today? Not only inmates, but people are outside and have to keep this felony all their life. Do we know how many people today?
The latest statistics indicate that 1 in 10 Oklahomans has a felony conviction. 1 in 10.
So 10% of the people can't vote, have almost no chance to find a job, to get house. All right. Very difficult.
Very difficult.
And concerning the women incarceration, why is so high in comparison of the United States?
So Oklahoma has had the highest female incarceration rate in the nation wow. since 1991. So literally for the last 25, 26 years, we've led the nation in female incarceration. There has been extensive research that has been conducted to try to determine why we have such a high incarceration rate. And what that research tells us is that there are common factors that lead a woman to become incarcerated in Oklahoma. Those factors would include abuse, domestic violence, mental illness, addiction, poverty, low education, low self-esteem, and unresolved trauma. And the reality is Oklahoma does very little to address those issues. We do very little on the front end to address what we would call the pathways to female incarceration. And yet when a female offender begins to engage in criminal activity, we throw the book at them without realizing that we could have prevented it if we would have just addressed some of those issues on the front end. Unfortunately, we have a high prevalence of domestic violence and abuse in Oklahoma. And oftentimes, a female is the victim of that negative and awful behavior. When she doesn't get the help that she needs, and she's carrying around trauma, unresolved trauma, it often leads to self-medication, which leads to addiction, and so on and so forth. And it begins this cycle of spiraling out of control. And we are very tough when it comes to a person who breaks the law without very much consideration of what we could do to sort of intervene and apply appropriate levels of support and help to prevent that individual from going to prison. And so because we don't invest on the front end, we see a very high prevalent rate of female incarceration on the back end.
So do you have a lot of women inmates coming to your organization, or is it mostly men?
So at Team, we serve both men and women. We serve more men than women, although we serve a very high number of women. But the reality is, even though we lead the nation in female incarceration, we have more men by the numbers who are incarcerated. So we have the second highest male incarceration rate in the nation as well. And so the female incarceration rate is based on the percentage of individuals who live in Oklahoma. So we probably serve about 60% of our participants are male and about 40% are female.
And so all the people who are coming to your place find a job after, or is it every time successful or not?
Yes, so we have employment partners within the Oklahoma City community who have agreed to become second chance employers, and they provide employment opportunities to our participants. Part of what we do is ensure that our participants are employed and that they stay employed. And so in any given year, about 83% of the participants that we serve obtain employment and maintain employment.
Does Oklahoma is an average of the United States, or do you feel that Oklahoma is every time late for this type of reform, for this type of mentality to instead of just put people in jail, try to help these people?
So Oklahoma historically, and I think that this is probably indicative of government in general, but Oklahoma tends to be reactive more than proactive. And so we tend to react to a situation and make decisions in a reactionary mode rather than taking time to really study and plan and make decisions in a very proactive way. And so I do think that Oklahoma obviously is behind when it comes to the issue of corrections reform and some other issues, but we have very talented people in our state, dedicated people who I also believe are trying hard to improve the situation, the quality of life within our communities. And I feel optimistic. I get discouraged, but I also feel optimistic that Oklahoma is about to turn the corner, especially on the issue of corrections reform, and begin to rethink some previous ways of thinking and ultimately, hopefully, enact some very proactive and forward-thinking policies.
I'm not sure, but I saw that you are considered as a conservative Republican. So is it something usual for a conservative Republican to try to reform the judiciary system, to try to help inmates to find a job?
So I do identify myself as a conservative Republican, but I see this issue of corrections reform as a conservative issue. It's actually an issue that sort of transcends the political spectrum. I think it's irresponsible, and I think it's wrong to throw money at a broken system. It costs $19,000 a year in Oklahoma to incarcerate an individual. It costs about $6,000 a year to provide treatment and supervision in the community. We know that that $19,000 a year to incarcerate a low-level offender is not reducing crime. It's not increasing public safety. In fact, it often makes a bad situation worse. We know that the better outcomes occur when we're able to apply treatment, appropriate levels of mental health care, and supervision in the community. So the question becomes for me, would I rather spend $19,000 a year for failure, or would I rather spend $6,000 a year for success? As a fiscal conservative, I would rather spend $6,000 a year for success. So I think this is a conservative issue, and I think conservatives ought to be able to embrace and understand and feel really good about advancing conservative, responsible policies and decisions in relation to our spending for incarceration. Let me also be quick to say that I think this is also an issue of social justice. And so given the fact that our current policies disproportionately impact communities of color and poor people and females, we have to rethink that. That is totally unacceptable. And it is in our best interest to help every Oklahoman reach their full potential in life. Listen, there is no such thing as a spare Oklahoman. Our communities are at their best, at their strongest, when everyone is able to contribute to the greater good. And so if we can advance policies that are going to help people, strengthen families, strengthen individuals, that's going to lead to better outcomes for communities across Oklahoma. And we owe it to the people who live in our state and their children to try to enhance enact policies that will help them flourish, not set them up for failure. So I kind of see this both as a very conservative issue and then also as a more progressive issue. And that's okay. I mean, we need to have issues that we can come together and work together and solve problems. I think these kind of issues represent who we are at our best and also what we're capable of accomplishing when we do work together.
All right, so what do you think the state can do to improve more the situation? What would be the next step for you?
The next step for the state of Oklahoma, in my estimation, is to move forward with the recommendations that are coming out of the governor's task force. Governor Fallon has put together a group of individuals to study how to reduce our current prison population beyond State Question 780 and 781. Her task force is being staffed by the Pew Foundation, PEW, and they are probably the nation's leader in research and policy development. And so the task force has crafted a set of recommendations that will actually reduce our prison population and completely eliminate the projected prison growth in Oklahoma. And I think that it's incumbent that the legislature embrace those reforms and move forward with those recommendations so that we can begin to spend more of our resources on education, on infrastructure, on services for kiddos in at-risk situations, healthcare, and things, other things that are very, very important within our state.
Okay. And does the team organization also some of our projects in the future?
We do have. So we team, the Education and Employment Ministry, serves adults who are incarcerated in Oklahoma. And we are currently in discussions with other partners, other providers within the community to add a service component for children of incarcerated parents so that we can truly try to break the cycle of incarceration and poverty within our state.
Thank you, Chris, for your interview. It was very nice.
Thank you so much.
The podcast is not finished. Right now, the Did You Know facts. Did you know that in the US, private prison population has declined in recent years? After a period of steady growth, the number of inmates held in private prison in the United States has declined modestly in recent years and continues to represent a small share of the nation's total prison population. In 2015, the most recent year for which data are available, about 126,000 prisoners were held in privately operated facilities under the jurisdiction of 29 states and the Federal Bureau of Prison. That's an 83% increase since 1999, the first year with comparable data, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. By comparison, the total US prison population increased 12% during that span. In more recent years, however, both the private and overall US prison populations have declined at modest rates. The private prison population has shrunk by 8% since its peak in 2012, while the overall prison population has fallen by 5% since its peak in 2009. The state private prison population peaked in 2012 with 96,774 prisoners, while the federal private prison population reached its peak a year later in 2013 with 41,159 prisoners. Since 1999, inmates in privately run facilities have made up a small share of all US prisoners. In 2015, just 8% of nearly 1.53 million state and federal prisoners in the US were in private facilities, up slightly from 5% in 1999. State inmates make up the majority of the US private population as well as the overall US prison population. In 2015, state prisoners made up 72% of the US private prison population and 87% of the overall US prison population. In 2015, nearly three quarters of all state prisoners in private facilities were held in the Sun Belt region of the US, including Texas, which has the largest private state prison population in the country. The Lone Star State's private prison population peaked at 20,041 in 2008, or 21% of all state inmates in privately run prisons at the time. By 2015, Texas' private prison population had dropped to 14,293. Florida had the second largest private prison population in 2015 with 12,487, while Georgia and Oklahoma had the third and fourth largest with 7,953 and 7,446 respectively. The US private prison industry was established in the 1980s and gained steam in the 1990s as policymakers grappled with how to respond to strain on the penal system, including rapid growth in prison population and increased prison spending. Private prisons were touted as an efficient and cost-effective solution. Several companies began providing correctional services at the state level starting in the 1980s and at the federal level starting in the late 1990s. This article was published by the Pew Research Center in April 11, 2017.
Thank you, dear listeners, for following us this week. Post Cafe podcasts are still available on voicesofhockey.org and audioport.org. Also, thank you for bensound.com for the music. See you next week.